The following program is brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, and the views and opinions may not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of this station. Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, Southwest says here's some more free entertainment in the sky, and we talk about the rise of the single female traveler and what she's looking for in her travel adventures.
At 3:20, our Smarter Traveler segment gives you some tips on how to avoid bringing a cold virus home when you fly.
Today, the second half of our show is all about cruising. Starting at 3:35, two experts join us to talk about everything from shore excursions to the advantages of cruising with a group, especially if it's your first time on a cruise ship.
And if this is your first time stopping by, thanks for joining us. And if you're a returning traveler, welcome back. You found the Travel and Entertainment Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
I got two tickets to paradise. They go
to Alaska, they go north to Russia's own.
On to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Your hosts are me. I'm supposed to do you first, huh? Mark Hoffman, and I'm Tom Romano. We're brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. I'm all alone again in the studio. Mark has been on the road doing the Route 66 thing here for a couple of weeks and has jumped off the road recently and is now in Milwaukee. Mark, tell our listeners what you're up to.
Well, I'm at the annual convention of the National Tour Association, which is kind of, for those of us who are tour operators for a living, this is what we do once a year to come together to figure out what new products we're going to offer our people the next year and to resolve issues and things of that sort. So it's very much a trade association sort of thing. And we are here in Milwaukee where the weather has definitely turned into winter-like temperatures in the low 40s. Milwaukee is really a great town, Tom. It's really, of course, they're known for their beer and their baseball team had a pretty good run this year. But it's really a very friendly town. And I find Wisconsinites are really wonderful folks, and we're really having a good time here in Milwaukee.
And when we talked last week, Mark, you were on the second half of your Route 66 trip from Oklahoma back to California. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, we finished our journey across the desert on the old highway through Arizona and across the desert in California, stopping at places like Elmer's Bottle Ranch, up in the high country in Southern California. A gentleman who, with his dad, when he was a youngster, started collecting old bottles out in the desert. And when his father passed away, had this huge collection, so he started creating these bottle trees. And now he has hundreds of them with dozens of bottles on each one. And and you'd say, well, that sounds kind of strange. And yeah, it's a little strange and a little different. And that's kind of sort of Route 66. That's the way it worked. We spent some time in Seligman, Arizona, with the man who basically saved the old highway, Angel Delgadillo, who was a barber when the interstate bypassed his little town of Seligman and decided that he wasn't going to take it laying down, and started a battle that eventually resulted in saving wonderful stretches of the old road. So I would just close with saying to folks that if you've ever thought about getting out and taking a journey on an old highway and kind of following its path and the things that have been there and the things that are still left and stuff like that, it's a wonderful way to discover America. It's a great way. Just make sure that you allow yourself enough time to be able to make the journey and to be able to stop along the way so that you don't have to make tough decisions about things not to see. But a journey or down old Route 66 is something that you will long remember, I assure you.
There you go. And I can assure you that you'll find photos of Mark's Route 66 trip in the near future at TravelGuysRadio.com. Well, all right. At the top of every Travel Guys radio program, we do our best to bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel news. And with that being said, Mark, what do you have for us this week?
Well, Tom, it's we mentioned in the In the headlines there about Southwest Airlines has added some more free entertainment. Southwest seems to be their mission to keep people occupied while they're flying, even though Southwest arguably has a little bit more comfortable planes in terms of seat pitch and the like than some of their competitors. They have announced that they have switched from a paid movie product to a free movie product on board its in-flight portal. So now everything is 100% free on Southwest, and all you have to do is be able to download their app and be able to connect to it when you get on board. So now it's even a little less expensive to fly on Southwest. Tom, you're a Southwest flyer, so are you a movie or television watcher on board an airplane?
You know, I am. When I do Southwest, I generally I don't usually buy the Wi-Fi because of the fact that, generally speaking, it runs so slow that if you get engaged in something, it'll drop off. But the free television programs that they offer without having to pay, when you just connect to their service without paying, has oftentimes you'll get a television program with maybe a sports or a football game or something, and of course the news, and I watch that. So this sounds like a way to take advantage, but you still do have to then buy the Wi-Fi though to take advantage of the free movies, correct?
No, you did before, but now you will not have to. Now you will be able to access the movies and the television shows and stuff for free. So the things you can access for free on a Southwest plane are increasing. Did you hear the one about the American Airlines baggage handler who took a nap inside the cargo storage area of a 737 in Kansas City and woke up in Chicago?
No, I didn't.
The employee who works for American subsidiary Piedmont Airlines at Kansas City International Airport was working on the ramp last Saturday when he decided to take a nap inside of the cargo hold. The plane took off at a couple minutes to six. Nobody noticed he was missing, and the plane parked at the gate in Chicago about 7:30. Luckily for him, the cargo hold was heated and pressurized, and so he was found unharmed. He was not charged with any crime, flew back to Kansas City on another American flight. Doesn't say anything about it here. Oh, yes, it does, too. American Airlines also said the employee has been suspended from work pending an investigation.
Yeah.
You think, maybe? we also talked a little bit about the rise of the female traveler. This has been in the travel news pretty consistently over the last couple of months. It seems as though a lot of travel suppliers, travel providers are figuring out what some of us at Sports Leisure Vacations figured out a long time ago, and that is that single female travelers are starting to really dominate the travel landscape. First of all, we know that women make about 75 to 80% of the travel decisions, even when they are part of a couple of, where it's a male-female couple. The women are making the travel decisions. Frequently, I know from my own experience that as men get older, they tend to let the ladies go out on their own, either by themselves or with a girlfriend, something like that. But female travelers are telling us that they prefer the U.S. and Europe. 58% said they had taken a trip by themselves in the last 2 years. 60% said that was in the United States, and 57% said it was Europe. Interestingly enough, Tom, and we see this at Sports Leisure Vacations, a great percentage of women, about 15%, travel in single accommodations but are traveling with a friend or companion who is just staying in separate. So in other words, if you and I were on the road together, mm-hmm. we'd be in under this example, we'd be in separate rooms, but we'd probably, hang out together at attractions and have some of our meals together and things of that sort while still having a measure of independence. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And, that is the new, that particular audience is becoming more and more prevalent. And like you say, Sports Leisure has noticed that for years.
Well, and here's the deal, is that single female travelers in the last, I would say, 10 to 20 years, women have become more comfortable in society in general of being out on their own. So we see a lot more female travelers who are willing, particularly if they're traveling as a part of a group, which at my company is the way, of course, that travel is done. But a lady traveling by herself in a traveling party, but who is part of a larger group, so therefore has the security of having other people around, but still has the independence to be able to do what they want to do. It, nearly 50% of women globally have taken a holiday by themselves, and 75% of women globally who travel plan to take a trip by themselves in the next 3 years. So, and the reason this is changing is because when they talked about to American women, close to half of them took their first solo trip when they were between the ages of 18 and 25. So younger women obviously feel freer to take a getaway on their own or to travel with a group of their female friends. So just all kind of interesting, but definitely the rise of the single female traveler is something that we're seeing a lot more of these days.
Interesting. All right. Well, what else you got on the travel news?
Well, let's see here. How clean is your hotel coffee maker? This is kind of interesting. Some folks at smartertravel.com picked up a few hotel coffee makers and had them tested and found that they carry between a moderately or highly abundant quantity of germs. So the suggestion from the folks at Smarter Traveler is that you don't want to use the instant coffee maker in your room. If you have a microwave, you want to put water in a cup and heat it up in the microwave as opposed to using the coffee maker in your room, because like they said, although the water is heated to boiling, there are lots of shared surfaces on the coffee maker that you are touching that the last person touched. And the only way to really clean those coffee makers is to immerse them in a vinegar solution every 3 months. And the doctor of the professor of microbiology and environmental sciences at the University of Arizona who issued this report says he doubts that is happening. So he said his suggestion is whenever you're in a public situation like that, yeah, and have the opportunity to use a shared coffee maker, if the opportunity presents itself to be able to heat your water in another way for your beverage, to take advantage of that opportunity. And that is your travel news for today.
And there you go. I didn't know that, but I have stopped using those some time ago because, well, it's never very good anyway. And nowadays, every hotel has either a Starbucks or something, a Pete's Coffee, at the bottom of the elevator, not too far from your room. We are the Travel Guys, and coming up, we continue to make you a smarter traveler. We're going to talk about tips on how to avoid bringing a cold virus home with you when you fly. That's next here on the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Again, thanks for joining us. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the Travel and Entertainment Guys. We're here every Sunday, 3 to 4 o'clock. You can also follow along at TravelGuysRadio.com. And don't forget, if you're out of town, you can always find us at iHeartRadio Sundays between 3 and 4. Podcasts available there and at TravelGuysRadio.com. Time to make you a smarter traveler. Mark, you alluded to the fact that there is some advice that you're going to give us in regards to not taking home a cold virus when you fly. I think most people would say that perhaps, you know, I don't know, maybe 30-40% of the time that they travel, they do come home with somebody else's cold. What advice do you have for us today?
Well, you know, it's pretty rare these days. Let me approach that a different way. It's not uncommon these days when you get on a public carrier of some type, whether it's a bus or a plane or whatever it is, you hear somebody hacking or scratching. It's winter time, and you're thinking, gosh, you know, I hope that doesn't infect us. We were just talking about coffee makers in the last segment in hotels being nasty places. Certainly tray tables and restrooms on airplanes and stuff are places that are not friendly places for travelers no matter what time of the year. But when you get into flu and cold season, let's face it, nobody wants to go on vacation and 2 or 3 days later come down with a miserable cold or a 24-hour virus or something like that and wondering whether it was the food or the water or the pina coladas, or maybe it was just the long plane ride that mm-hmm. got to you. Mm-hmm. So some things that you should know when you're traveling. First of all, when you're in an airplane cabin, the humidity is very, very low. Generally, the humidity inside of an airplane cabin is about 10%. So at such low levels of humidity, you lose a lot of your natural defense system. The mucus in your nose and your throat that helps keep germs from getting easily into your body dries up and is pretty crippled. And so it's a much more tolerant environment for cold and germs to get to you. So if one of the things that you can do is to apply something particularly to your nose that helps keep your nose from drying out, so that if your nose stays a little bit, for lack of a better word, wet, then those systems that protect you are activated and will keep you a little bit safer. This one's an easy one. Stay hydrated. Drink plenty of water. Generally, they say 8 ounces for every hour that you're in the sky. I think that's probably fine if you're on a 2-hour flight. But if you're on an 8-hour flight, 64 ounces of water would be a lot, or any other liquid. So, but really and truly, for each airline flight that you're on, you should try to drink a couple of glasses of water. Alcohol is not going to help you. So in terms of being hydrated, so you want to stay away from things like alcohol. Also sugar, not particularly good for you, carbonated beverages. So literally water or things that have just a very slight amount of flavoring or sweetening in them are going to be better for you when you fly than having a Coca-Cola.
Well, boy, I tell you, you've just pretty much taken all the fun out of flying there, you know. No, I can't have a candy bar and a bourbon and water. Well, hey, wait a minute. It's got water in it. Is that not? No.
Well, no. Okay. No, that's alcoholic beverages will dry you out. If you're going to drink alcohol on a plane flight, drink it early. You know, get on board, have your beverage, have your nap, wake up, have a couple glasses of water, you're good to go. I mean, that's okay. The way to handle a beverage, or have an alcoholic beverage before you get on the plane. Notice I said an alcoholic beverage as opposed to a whole bunch of them. Don't make yourself a nuisance to the rest of us. Keep your hands clean. This is important all the time, especially in the wintertime, but especially when you're traveling. When you go through security, those trays and belts and things are the nastiest things. They've got all kinds of germs on them. We've already talked about the shared surfaces on planes. You should wash your hands when you're traveling a minimum of 3 times a day. I try to do it every time I think of it. But certainly every time that you're using a restroom facility, or every time you're eating, or just every time you say, gee, it's been several hours and I'm touching all these surfaces, you will do yourself a huge service by just considering the possibility of washing your hands more often. And also, you know, washing your hands for 5 seconds is fine, and that's better than no seconds. But the reality is that you need 20, 25, 30 seconds of washing your hands. It helps if you have warm water as opposed to cold water, but cold water is better than nothing. Don't forget dental hygiene. Because remember, we were talking about the nose and the mouth. So right. Using a germ-killing mouthwash. Mm-hmm. Is before you fly or in flight, you know, you go up, you use the restroom facilities, you've got a little tiny bottle of mouthwash and you're trying to be, have your breath be fresh to the people around you. Anyway, this is an opportunity to, again, to activate one of those systems, one of those protection systems in your body. So remember, though, that a bottle of mouthwash that you're carrying has to be 3 ounces or less, or you won't be able to get it through security. Mm-hmm. Remember to take your vitamins. Vitamins that you normally take, and also, despite the fact that everybody says take a lot of vitamin C, there is no conclusive data that has shown that large doses of vitamin C prevent colds, although there is some data that indicate that it may reduce the severity or the duration of the symptoms once you get a cold.
All right. Well, that's some good stuff. I'm a big fan of wiping down the tray, the seat belts, the armrests on the plane, all of that before I even buckle up. Is that on your list of things to do?
Well, and you know, Tom, that it is the shared surfaces. You know, people, you got on a plane 5 years ago and saw somebody doing that, you thought to yourself, wow, that person's really a germaphobe. But it's much more common now to see people getting on the plane, especially if they're going to use, for example, the tray table. You know, I don't wipe the tray table down because most of the time it doesn't come down. But if I'm going to use the tray table, yeah, if I'm lucky enough to have gotten an upgrade to first class and they bring around the hot towel, then I tend to take that hot towel after I've wiped my hands with it and wipe the surfaces, the armrests and the tray table and stuff like that. So no, I don't think that's being over. I mean, if you made an hour long production of it, then yes. But if you just get on and wipe the stuff down, I don't think so. The last item on my list here is preventing airborne germs. Occasionally you will see somebody wearing a face mask. Sometimes that is to prevent infection, but in many cases, the person wearing the face mask is already infected. They are doing the rest of the public a favor by making sure that you don't get infected by whatever it is, malady that they have. So sometimes it's not, the person wearing the mask may not be a germaphobe themselves. They may be doing you a huge public favor by trying to make sure that you're not infected. If you're not up for wearing a mask, avoiding germs might be as easy as choosing the window seat. One study found that people sitting on the aisle are more likely to contract viruses on an airplane.
Oh, boy.
Another idea is to use the air vent, the overhead air vent. I confess I've done this. I get onto somebody who's sitting next to me and is coughing or something like that. I like to take that air vent and just direct it in directly in front of your face. So not on top of your head, but just so that the air coming down is coming down in front of your face, so that hypothetically you're moving the air out of the way and you're getting air that's being recirculated. You're getting air that's a little bit fresher than the air that the person next to you is already coughed into. So perhaps that's a little bit of a germaphobe thing, but again, that's another little thing that you can do, and it's something that I do on a pretty regular basis when I get on an airplane, especially if I've got somebody around me that I think might be bringing something that I don't want.
Well, there you go. There's the information to help you come home healthy when you travel. Thanks, Mark. We are the Travel Guys, and coming up, we're going to make you a smarter traveler if you're planning on cruising sometime in the near future. That's all on the back half of this travel show, so stick with us. We are the Travel Guys. We're here to make you a smarter traveler every week, 3 to 4 o'clock. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. And as always, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Mark, as we always tell people, you can go to TravelGuysRadio.com to follow along with what we're talking about. And today, it's cruising. Who do you have there with you?
Well, I've got a couple of local experts, shall we say. I'm local from my own office. Michael Downer, who is our cruise expert at Sports Leisure Vacations, and Ramona Gooch, who is our general manager. And Michael and Ramona have both been out with groups on cruises within the last year, and Michael books them on a regular basis. So I thought they would be great people to talk today about a subject, Tom, that I think is something that you will be interested in, because we were talking before we started the segment about how the fact that you haven't taken a cruise yet, you and your wife, but that you're getting fairly close to kind of starting to look at things and stuff like that. So this is information that I thought it would be interesting to talk to folks about. There are a couple of ways to take a cruise. You can go by yourself. You can go to a travel consultant or a travel agent and have them book the cruise, get all the information you can, do your homework, and then head out on your own. You can completely do the whole thing by yourself by just going to a website and trying to do everything yourself. Or you can latch on to a company like Sports Leisure Vacations, who offers 4 or 5 times a year group cruises, where you can travel with a group of people, and you'll also be traveling with a tour or cruise director, so that if you have some type of a personal challenge or you have a logistical challenge, flight gets canceled, something like that, while you have somebody along with you to help out. So there are lots of different ways to travel. If you travel with someone, it's going to cost you a little bit more money, because service costs money. But if you're spending $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 per person on a cruise, then a few hundred extra dollars to be able to ensure that the possibility of success on that trip is a little greater seems like a good deal to me, particularly as we were talking about, Tom, in your case, where you're not as experienced of a cruiser. So we have Michael and Ramona here today, and I thought we could do is ask them some questions because they both not only help people plan their cruise vacations, but they take people out on cruises, so they have firsthand experience of some of the things that might come along when you're out on a trip. So Michael and Ramona, welcome to the Travel Guys. Michael, let me ask you first, since you're the guy who generally handles most of the logistics of these things. When people come to you and they say they've never been on a cruise before, what are some of the red flags that kind of go up for you on that?
Well, one of the things I'd like to go over with them and try to work out with them is, what are they expecting on their cruise? You know, what sort of vacation are they looking for?
So, Michael, it sounds like that the cruise line that you select has a lot to do with your chances of success. Different cruise lines have different demographics that they appeal to. If I'm a retired senior, I'm probably not going on a Disney cruise unless I'm going with my grandchildren.
That's exactly right. So one of the things that we do in the business is we help you select the cruise line that's going to fit your needs. If you're looking for a cruise line that's more quiet, you're not going to want a bunch of teenagers running around. So if you're looking for something, if you like to party, you stay up at night, you're looking for a cruise line that offers those options to you.
And Michael, the cruise line that you choose is also going to make some determinations, and maybe this is someplace where Ramona can jump in also, in terms of, you're talking about activities that are on board, but how you socialize and what types of events and things that are scheduled are going to be determined by the type of people who are on board the ship.
That is correct. Now, each cruise line is going to have a variety of different activities for you. So you're not going to be stuck in, you know, one sort of activity, but they'll be generally geared towards the demographic that they're looking for.
Now, Ramona, when folks go on cruises, the shore excursions are a big part of a cruise experience. Obviously, you know, you have what's on the boat, but then whatever is off the boat too is a big part of the experience. And folks who don't have a lot of cruise experience are always wondering, you know, should they buy their shore excursions in advance? Should they wait until they get to the ship? Sometimes there are shore excursions available when you get off the boat that are a lot less expensive than the ones that you purchase on board. But are those folks legitimate, and do they have insurance? And talk a little bit about shore excursions and how an experienced versus an inexperienced cruiser might look at those.
So for starters, that's really where talking to someone like Michael or myself before you select a shore excursion can really help, because we can talk about the activity level. If you're a solo traveler, maybe you've always wanted to go ziplining, but you're not sure you want to do it by yourself. In our case, Michael and I took some folks ziplining a couple of years ago. We had five women on there who would never have done it by themselves, and they had an awesome experience because they knew that we were along, and we assured them that they'd be able to do it. So our experience helps enrich their experience.
So kind of a fun kind of peer pressure, and also being able to have somebody who can say, you know, look, I've done this, or I've spoken to the folks who put this together, and here's what you're getting into, might entice somebody to do something that maybe they might not normally do.
Exactly. We're encouraging them, but they also know that they're not going out and doing it by themselves. And I think that's an important part of what we offer them as well. We obviously can't go on every shore excursion, but we know the shore excursions that are out there and can gear them, kind of help direct them to ones that are higher activity level, others that are maybe just riding on a bus for a city tour. Generally, we don't support or encourage people to do shore excursions that are not offered by the cruise line, because if you go with an official shore excursion, mm-hmm. The vendors are guaranteed to get you back to the ship before it leaves. The independent trips that are out there, those vendors don't have that guarantee, and the ship's not going to wait for you. But if one of the sanctioned groups is late, the ship will wait for you.
If you go out on a shore excursion and your bus breaks down and you can't get back to the ship in time, then they're going to wait for you, as opposed to you got off and picked a wildcat guy who was $20 cheaper. They, in essence, they don't know where you are, nor do they care quite as much.
Exactly.
You know, being someone who is not cruised and thinking about it, and I know a lot of our listeners may be in this boat too, is there any suggestions that you have in regards to your first cruise? I'm starting to think that maybe my first cruise should be with an organized group. Your thoughts?
I definitely think it should be, because it gives you an idea, it gives you a way to look at the lay of the land, to see how the cruise ships operate, how things work. You're there, you're with people that will help you if you run into a problem. That way you just got that security level that you wouldn't normally have if you're on your own and you run into a problem. And then, you know, you're become your own advocate, and you have to, your skills will determine how well that problem is solved.
Michael, would you say that folks who haven't cruised before maybe don't have a full concept of how many moving parts that are involved with an airfare and maybe a hotel stay and a pre or a post cruise package and the cruise itself? And that's a lot of logistical moving parts if you're not used to all of that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. And it just depends on what cruise you're going to. If you're doing maybe a 7-day Caribbean cruise, you know, there's less moving parts than something like that than if you're doing something in Europe or South America, where you've got customs to deal with, you've got, you know, international airports, and a lot of things could just, you know, go wrong if someone's not there to help you along.
So you're a fairly staunch believer that, especially if you're an inexperienced cruiser, that going with somebody who has some experience who can help you along with situations that you might encounter along the way is probably a pretty good idea.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a firm believer of that.
Ramona, what's your thoughts on cruising alone versus cruising in a group?
Well, I'm definitely an advocate for traveling in a group. I'm a solo traveler generally by myself. And what I like about being with the group is that, for example, what Michael and I do when we're out on the tour is we have opportunities for the solo travelers to come together and meet the other people that they're traveling with, because the ships can be a little bit daunting. It's like, what do I do? Where do I go?
Well, and if you're not one of those people who is a social butterfly, then how do you meet people and how do you enhance your
exactly
experience?
And so what I do is for example is take folks out. I say, meet me on the promenade at 9 o'clock in the morning, and let's do a couple of laps together. And we walk around, and that gives the walkers, or sometimes people just bring their book out and sit and read, knowing that we're going to be out on the promenade. Likewise, we get together in the afternoon at the happy hour, and it's a chance for people to talk about their shore excursions and share that excitement, because they're traveling solo. They don't have anybody to talk to. So now they do. And then, you know, they'll say, hey, do you want to go to the dining room for dinner? Or are you going to go to the buffet? Or do you want to go to the show tonight? So they have someone to do an evening activity with. And it's all self-selection.
And don't forget now, all that we talk about here on the Travel Guys and stuff on cruising will be found at TravelGuysRadio.com. We got lots of more great tips on cruising coming up in about 2.5 minutes. Don't go away. Keep it here. We are the Travel Guys.
If you...
You're listening to the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom, and our special guests, Ramona Gooch and Michael Downer, the cruise experts at Sports Leisure Vacations. Guys, here again, a question from somebody who has not cruised. Is there a length of time on a cruise for a beginner? You know, I don't see myself trying it for the first time for like, you know, 10 days. I'm thinking I might be better off with you know, 6-day thing, something close, maybe Alaska or whatever. What are your thoughts in regards to length of cruise advice for us beginners?
So I'll jump in on that question because I'm known as the tree hugger in the company, and nobody thought I would ever enjoy cruising. What I think is you really need something in the 5 to 7 day range. For me, it took me about 2 days to settle into the routine and the pace of a cruise. And what now? I'm cruising 14 days and I love it, but I really think you need to start off about 5 to 7 days. Michael?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think a 10 or 14 day cruise is probably going to be too much for the first timer. Now, that's going to depend on each individual person, but I think for the first time out, a 7-day cruise would probably be really good.
7-day cruises, heck, of the Mexican Riviera or the Caribbean or Alaska are fairly good places to start. And correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, but the cruise lines offer all kinds of exotic itineraries. I mean, you can go all the way around the world. There are people who live on a few select number of people who actually live on cruise ships who have figured out that it's not all that expensive and it's not a bad way to go. I'm not sure that I would necessarily be interested in that.
I'm not sure I could do that either. But yeah, you could do a cruise anywhere from like 3 days to 180 days if you want to do an entire world cruise. So it just depends on the areas that you're looking to see. And, you know, how much you become involved in cruising, how much fun you think that is. I personally, these days, a 7-day cruise is not quite long enough for me. I would like to do more of a 10, 14-day cruise, I think, is about a good length for us at this point.
But you make a good point, Tom, in that if you haven't cruised before, which is kind of the point of our conversation here today, the difference between experienced cruisers and inexperienced cruisers is that get out there and find out. Because for some people, like, for example, Mark would be an example of this, big cruise ships with several thousand people on board drive me nuts. Can't do it. Have no interest in it whatsoever. Just is not something that it's not a way that I choose to travel. But I acknowledge that for a lot of people, especially for the middle class of America, it is America's vacation. And it is a way for people to experience destinations and types of travel that they wouldn't normally experience. So it's a great way to make it a part of your travel experiences. But I'm one of those guys who the idea of getting on a cruise ship. Now, I would get on a cruise ship with 150 or 200 people, but on a small cruise ship, but I'm just not interested in a bigger one. Ramona?
I just want to jump in here. Two things. You make a great point about the size of the ship. We generally at Sports Leisure go on ships that are in about the 1,500 passenger range, which for you, Mark, might seem like it's a really a large ship. But I'll tell you, it's funny. You meet these people at the airport, you meet them standing at check-in, and suddenly you see the same people the whole time over the cruise. It's a really a small community once you're on the ship. But going back to the length of the trip, I think it's important too, and somebody like Michael or any cruise expert can help you, select one that doesn't have a lot of at-sea days. Make sure that, that's why I like the Alaska cruise as a starter, because you get to go to shore every day, and that makes the cruising experience a little less like you're cruising. It just means you have one hotel the whole time.
For someone who hasn't done a lot of cruising also, there is a situation that occurs at some destinations on cruise ships where you have to tender in, where the ship doesn't dock. And you don't walk off onto a physical dock. You have to get onto a smaller boat to go ashore. So, again, that's where having somebody with a little bit of expertise, if you're somebody with mobility issues, you probably want to avoid a cruise that has mostly tendering ports. Just before we go here, Michael and Ramona, just kind of wrap up a few things here. We're talking about whether or not you should travel individually or traveling with a group. And some of the points that you guys have made here is that from a social standpoint, traveling with a group gives you an opportunity to make new friends and meet new people, be involved in activities that you might not normally be involved in. Ramona giving an example of getting her group out to just do a little physical exercise in the morning. The cruise ships all have schedules of activities and things like that all day long. Also, if you're traveling with someone, you can regularly make contact with that person. Like on a Sports Leisure trip, the cruise director is available to you at certain times during the day so that you can make connections. And if you're having any kind of a problem or an issue or you just have a question, that person can advocate for you while you go ahead and go on to your vacation. And you can also take advantage of some of the cruise activities to get together with the group of people that you're traveling with, like a happy hour or something like that. Having an advocate with you is especially helpful if you're on an international trip where you're going through customs and you may not be used to that. I can remember a cruise that I was on to Alaska where people got off the ship and just getting your luggage, because there were some things that day that complicated the situation, just finding your luggage and getting on the bus to the airport was something that was beyond most people's ability to be able to pull off. So having somebody who has experience, things that you can encounter on board, and also the opportunity to be able to, with our groups, and I know other companies in Sacramento, Zoe's Cruises has been around forever, and will do pre-cruise gatherings where you can meet with the other people that you're traveling with and ask questions and kind of get a feel for. But if you wouldn't you say, Ramona and Michael, that the most important thing if you're taking a cruise is to do your homework? To know the ship that you're getting on and the type of itinerary and the type of people that you're going to be traveling with?
Absolutely. I mean, that's really the most important thing about all of this is to know what you're getting, to have your expectations met, to make sure that the ship you're getting on is the one that you're going to be on it for a week. Make sure that you're going to be able to enjoy yourself.
Ramona, anything that we haven't covered here that you would like to add?
I just have to add to Michael's there. I don't know how many times I've talked to different clients who have said, oh, cruising is not for me. I don't want to get on those big ships with tens of thousands of people. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to party all night long. And what I can tell them is that there are other experiences out there. You can be on ships of 160 people, or you can be on a ship of 1,500, and they're age-appropriate activities going on.
One of the coolest things I've ever done in my life was to go out to Tahiti on one of the Windstar cruises, the sailing ships, and spend a week going around the islands there, and their ships accommodate about 150 people. So it was an amazing experience. And yes, I mentioned that I'm not a big fan of large cruise ships, but the flip side is I'm a huge fan of smaller cruise ships where you can, I remember a trip through the St. Lawrence Seaway one point in time on a ship that had 30 cabins. So what's that, 50 or 60 people? Yes, Michael.
Well, just to comment on the Windsong experience you had, my wife and I took our honeymoon on a Windsong at Tahiti, and we still talk about it almost 30 years later.
Yeah. Cruising is not for everyone, Tom, but when you decide to go, find yourself an expert, go with a group of people, and do your homework, and chances are pretty good that your first cruise won't be your last one.
You know, I got a ton of great information out of the last 20 minutes with Ramona and Michael, and I think I'm ready to hit the big ship, the ship,
yeah.
not the boat. The boat's the thing that you get on when the ship is sinking, right?
There you go.
See that? I learned that too.
You did. You can go to travelguysradio.com, and you found that there was some great information there and you're like, wow, I'd like to be able to have that to sit down and talk to my cruising buddy with, go to travelguysradio.com. You can sign up for the podcast. We'll send you a link on Tuesday, and you'll be able to tap into all of the great information that Ramona and Michael had there. They are people who have sold and taken people on cruises for many years, so their information is firsthand and I think really valuable. All right, next week on the Travel Guys, as we're on the last lap for this week's show, Steve LaRosa is going to join us with one of his What's Going On, and we are going to spend a whole lot of time talking about road trips. I just finished a road trip on the old highway, Route 66. Steve is going to join us next week, and we are going to talk about road trips and the vehicles that you took them in, and we are going to invite our listeners to share. So if you have a road trip story from when you were a kid, when all the kids piled in the back of the station wagon, you'd like to share, be with us next week, and sharing your story might win you a prize here on the Travel Guys.
That's great. That should be a lot of fun. Everybody has road trip stories about when they were kids, and if you're, you know, my age and Mark's age or anywhere near there, that was back when, before seat belts. And you traveled in a car like you would be arrested for traveling in a car these days. So anyway, it'll be a lot of fun. We look forward to having you join us. And don't forget now, podcasts and everything for the travel show at travelguysradio.com. Final words, Mark?
Remember to dance like nobody's watching. We'll be back in the studio live for you next week.
All right. Thanks, everyone. You stay well. See you next time.